Hey, it's Chris Jones with the Jones Zone, and this episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Jones Zone at Keller Williams Realty. That's right, we sponsor our own podcast. So if you know of anybody looking to buy, sell, rent, or invest in residential real estate in the Charlotte, Rock Hill, Fort Mill area, have them connect with us on their favorite platform. Enjoy the show.
It's Chris and Brian Jones, your real estate advocates, community connectors, talking Charlotte and York County area real estate, and interviewing business owners, entrepreneurs, and community leaders. Welcome to the Jones Zone Podcast.
All right, here we go. You ready?
Count me down.
All right, don't interrupt me this time.
I won't, I promise.
All right, 3, 2, 1... Hit it, Chris.
Welcome to the Jones Zone Podcast.
You did not interrupt me. Thank you for that.
Why'd you interrupt me? I was talking.
How do you like it?
I don't like it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Let's do it.
Episode what? We're in the 60s. That's about all I know.
67.
67.
67.
Awesome, man. What you been up to today, Brian?
Uh-huh?
What have you been up to today?
You know, CEO stuff.
I wouldn't understand.
You wouldn't understand
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha. CEO stuff.
So, I gotta tell you something. And Jason, too. I came across some missionaries today. I don't know if they were Mormon or what
The
deal is, but...
Were they in the white shirts?
Yeah, they had the white shirts, black pants,
okay,
bicycle helmets. Like, they were riding their bike. I didn't have any interaction with them.
Okay.
I'm not talking bad about them or anything. They were riding their bikes on a busy road... Mm-hmm. Out in Belmont.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I would phone it in. If I was a missionary, I'd be the worst.
Can we Uber, right?
Missionary ever. I would have gave up so long. It's the middle of the summer. They're riding their bikes with their helmet. Like it was a miracle that they didn't get hit by a car. I don't know for a
fact
that they
hazard.
Didn't.
That's a safety hazard.
Maybe they're protected.
I don't
as
know.
As part of their,
maybe.
You know,
but the effort level, I can't. Man, I don't. Maybe I just don't have enough faith or whatever, but I could not put myself through that in the middle of August. Are you still recording?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get on with it. All right, today, now that I got that out of my system, we are here with Jason Collette with Adaptivity Development. Adaptivity Development partners with companies large and small, new and established, to maximize their core strengths and address weaknesses to achieve their true goals. Jason is also an accomplished professional keynote speaker, providing informational and motivational speeches on transformation, leadership, change management, drug testing and strategy.
Maybe we should do a drug test.
Start over. In 2016, he was named Rock Hill Area's Business Person of the Year. He serves on several different boards, including the York County Economic Development Committee, the Rock Hill Area Committee Chamber of Commerce. He supports the Technology Incubator and provides education and support to local schools, universities, and colleges. Jason, welcome to the Jones Zone, man. Good to have you.
Get your breath.
Well, thank you.
That was a mouthful.
Impressive resume there.
Thank you for the intro.
Yeah, so that's a little bit of a brief overview, but if you don't mind, man, why don't you share a little bit of your personal story and some of your professional background, and then how you got into doing all these things you're doing, man.
All right, my personal story. Well, that's always an odd or interesting, maybe, question. I kind of have a eclectic background. Some would call it eclectic. Some would call it schizophrenic and scattered. Some would call it I don't know what. But kind of dabbled with music very early on in life. Was a classical cellist and went to school for that. Left home and went to school and traveled quite a bit throughout. The world as a musician, and had the fortunate experience of being to almost every continent in the world before I was 18. I didn't make it to, I hadn't made it to Antarctica.
Yeah, they don't put on many concerts out there from what I hear.
But yeah, my teens and certainly my 20s, I did a lot of traveling. So that was a great way to kind of get started, and then had a pretty dramatic shift from the arts, went towards psychology. And between psychology and business, I kind of found my home. So I guess ever since those early years, I've been focused on kind of the human factor side of business.
Okay.
And whether that's with the corporate 500 or even corporate 10 entities that I've worked with, or that's, you know, a small startup, brand new business, it's always kind of looking at, you know, what are the business factors, but with a concentration on how do you make it successful? Because ultimately, there's somebody either buying or selling or participating in the process or whatever it is. That's ultimately what makes the business successful.
So you were a cellist at age 13 that traveled around the world. Were you like a child prodigy? How young did you start? And who was your favorite cello player growing up?
Do you know those two cello brothers?
I don't know the two. I've met Yo-Yo Ma, but that's been a long time ago.
All right, cool.
My mom was, both my parents are physicians, and originally they were destined to be much different. My mom was going to be a stay-at-home, you know, mom and piano teacher, and my dad was going to, I don't know, work the farm and maybe be a guidance counselor at the high school or something, and their paths changed, and when they became physicians or went on that path to of education, my mom spent a lot of time with me with music and playing the piano, and I kind of picked up on it, and eventually that translated to cello and saxophone and guitar and, you know, other instruments. And so I had an opportunity to travel with a youth orchestra, and off I went. Yes. And then one thing led to another.
So is that with, what kind of program is that? I mean, did you have to try out for the youth orchestra? Like, what is that?
Yeah, there's tryouts and cuts and that sort of thing. And at that point in time, I'd gone to state competitions and, you know, placed, taken first letters in those. And
state competitions?
Mm-hmm.
Is that broken into age groups or...?
Some of it's by age, some of it's by school and region and so forth, but there's different categories for different things. These were solos that I participated in, and then, again, one thing led to another, so you just kind of find yourself...
Yeah, that's really cool, man. You travel the world playing the cello for a teenage group.
Yes.
And then, so, you got out of that around 18, you said?
Finished all my music stuff because I did a couple different tours and I went away to school, but kind of turned away from all that. I was probably, 19, something like that.
And then you went off to college, I guess?
Yep, was at college. I had no idea what I wanted to do. So like every other former musician who had, you know, parents who were physicians, I went pre-med.
I don't know.
And then they said, well, you gotta pick a minor too. And it's like, all right, well, I'll do psychology, and fell in love with psychology.
Who's your favorite psychologist?
Yeah,
Freud.
Freud's interesting. I'm more of a behaviorist from that standpoint.
Okay, so
Skinner.
B.F. Skinner.
Yeah.
So my professor was B.F. Skinner's right hand man.
Really?
Wow.
So it was once removed. So that was kind of a cool. Exposure to that world.
I should get my mom on here, get you back, and the conversation they would have, because she loves B.F. Skinner. Yeah.
Well, and what's interesting to me is that very much, I didn't know it at the time, but I fell in love with business, right? So I knew I didn't want to be a, hey, lay back on the couch and tell me about your extramarital affairs and, you know, I'll try to help. That wasn't really my thing. But once I discovered that there was a psychological element to business and business development, that really rang true.
I think a lot of it is not the positive mindset part, but the psychological part in terms of, I don't care if you're writing copy for customers, if you're trying to improve employee performance. I mean, there is a ton of psychology in business.
I think about even like negotiations, right? So you could have an extremely well-prepared, you know, entrance, and then have your opponent or the person on the other side of the table totally throw a monkey wrench at you. Well, how do you deal with that, right? So you can react emotionally, or you can dial back, reposition, and, you know, move forward. All the way through, like you're saying, you know, advertising and marketing, and how is the company or the service or the delivery about the people or the community or tied to something bigger? I mean, you guys do a great job with that. But that's so vitally important, and I would say it's even getting more and more important as the generational shift occurs. As the millennials are coming into the workforce and the next generation is coming in, it's vitally important that there's purpose, that there's value behind the things that I'm buying or the things that I'm supporting. Yeah. So it's a big trend.
All right, so I guess you got out of pre-med at some point, graduated college. What happened?
Graduated.
He's still pre-med.
No, I got my pre-med degree.
Still pre-med. Finished up psychology, had a great time with that. In order to pay for school, my parents were wonderfully supportive, right? So like every other former musician who started studying psychology, I had to go get a job.
Ugh, the worst.
So my first job, actually two. So I started...
If you say Blockbuster.
Well, I worked at a brewery.
Okay.
So nothing like being in college and working at a brewery.
Oh, yeah.
And I worked at a indoor rock climbing gym. Awesome. And so those things both grew and led to other things. So I got out of school. I did an MBA. I went on for a PhD in industrial organizational psychology. Meanwhile, was working at the brewery, doing more with climbing. Started leading expeditions, or working with folks in ice climbing and going to Africa and Asia and different places.
In ice climbing, is that what you said?
Ice climbing and mountaineering.
So tell me about this. Well, at that place you worked, was it a rock climbing wall? You said, right?
Yeah, it's an indoor
rock climbing
gym.
So I did this class at Winthrop. They have that nice.
Yeah.
Well, I am great wall. The worst rock climber in history. No,
who would give up faster, you as a rock climber or me as a Mormon missionary? Who would be the bigger quitter?
You.
I would last a day.
There's a technique. You have to use a technique to. You can't just climb because your forearms, lactic acid builds up, and it's forget about it.
And
you
can't. Done.
And like I made it up probably 8 feet, and there's I'm 26 when I'm at Winthrop, right? And there's these 18-year-olds just. Having fun, they're going up to the top. I'm like peeing my pants halfway, like not even a quarter way up.
The best experience to sit in those gyms and have. I mean, this happens so many times, and I'm going to be kind of like cliche, right? But you'd have this teeny tiny petite girl come in with this muscle bound guy that meathead whatever, and the competition's already going right, and then next thing you know. This little girl is just like boop, 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 like a spider up the wall because they're turning and they're using their hips and they're stepping up on their legs and it's just kind of this natural ability. And you have this guy that's, trying to muscle it,
mm-hmm.
burns out,
yep.
Before he even gets to the top.
You can't move your arms.
And then,
the lactic acid just...
The relationship falls apart.
my feet are too big, babe. I can't move.
I'm stronger than you
are. I don't have any more step. So how do you get a license as a rock climbing instructor? You just go through a class?
There's an AMGA certification, which is the American Mountain Guide Association, and they're kind of the one of the authorities. So you can go through them and do a bunch of things. I partnered with a couple people and had some great experiences, but I was kind of like the psychological guy and definitely depended heavily on the folks that were, technically savvy and knew all the ins and the outs.
And so you got to travel the world as a rock climbing instructor too?
Well, I didn't do as much climbing instruction as I did more like coaching and that sort of thing in the realm of climbing, right? So I knew enough about climbing to be dangerous.
I guess
that's probably not
put
the,
your foot
the
there.
Best frame.
And you have to know how to tie the cords. There's a bunch of different. I've never taken Boy Scouts, and I'm not good with straps. Even in the Air Force, when they made us put up tents, anything with like lace or ropes, anything. I'm not that good.
Lace.
You're gonna climb with lace?
I got laces.
That was actually.
I'm not the kind of guy who can tie things. So.
That was actually one of the things that I did. So we bring in a group, say like a management team, right? There's like 30 people standing in the room, and I'd tell them, "All right, I'm gonna show you all how to put on this harness safely, one time." Here's the key from an emotional, communication, psychological perspective. Each and every one of you will remember about 10% of what I tell you, right? Each one of you is going to remember a different 10%, but I'm only going to tell you once. And so the only way that you're going to be able to survive, not climb up, flip upside down, fall out and die, is you're going to have to work together to make sure that these harnesses are on correctly. So I'd show them once. And then the arguments and the debates would ensue, right? And of course, never let anybody go forward without being safe. But it's an interesting exercise.
That was part of the
because
psychology.
It shows how we as individuals, I mean, our attention spans are hard. Our what we process and what we focus on in any given conversation is going to be different for each one of us, and we're not going to encapsulate 100%, right? We're going to walk away with a fraction. So, got to know that when you're working with people and communicating.
All right. After that, you got into corporate America, I guess? Or how would you describe what you did after that?
Yeah. So, I went to a company called Schneider National. They're the largest domestic transportation carrier in the world. They do truckloads. They're known for orange trucks. Actually, just this past year, they went public, which is pretty fascinating because it was a private family-owned company. And over there, I worked with an international logistics team. They were based in Europe.
Are you back in Michigan at this point? Or
Wisconsin. Green Bay, Wisconsin. I learned to become a football fan.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well, if you paid your taxes, I think you owned part of the Packers, didn't you?
Yeah, well, you pay tax wherever you go. I mean, you fill up the gas tank and you're paying Packer tax on it. You buy cereal and you're supporting the team.
Part of the Packer tax. Quit your whining.
Is that a real thing?
Oh, yeah.
The town owns the team, I think, right?
Well, the state.
The state, yeah. Yeah.
But right there in Green Bay, I guess it's Green Bay, right? Green Bay Packers. Yeah, there's taxes, extra taxes on everything that you do to help pay for the team. Which is interesting.
So Schneider and then...
Schneider, which led to Bank of America, which brought me to Charlotte. Then I was with Honeywell for a stint, HR, global HR. Then I started two companies, two laboratories, doing DNA, forensics, drug and alcohol testing, that sort of thing.
Start something like that? I mean, what does that even mean? Yeah, I started a company. We do tests. Oh, you do them? Well, I don't do them.
Oh, it's even better than that. It's not even you do tests. I became the pee guy, right? I mean, I'm like the urine enabler. So,
oh, man.
What a great badge of honor to wear around.
Should I get into my real quick? I got a funny story. I don't know if I should say it. I'm not going to go there.
What did you get? You spill pee on yourself?
No. Right. Okay, so I was in the Air Force. This was Tampa. I was stationed at MacDill Air Force Base. I was at work, and security forces found a joint in the dorm parking lot. Mm-hmm. And I lived in the dorm. So all the airmen who lived in the dorms had to go take a urine test.
Yep.
Now, in the Air Force, there's literally somebody standing over your shoulder making sure there's no... You know,
no funny business.
Yeah, no switcheroos going on.
Pee for me, Jones.
I'm a shy bladder guy.
Yeah,
this. Yeah. Everybody knows this. Who knows me? I have a shy bladder. I have anyways.
Your bladder has anxiety problems.
It does. It really does. So, you know, I'm trying to go. This guy is over. He's just standing over my shoulder, and you know, I try, but it hit me. I had to go to the bathroom. The other one, you know? So I kind of like, I was like, I can't go right now. Let me drink some more water. He's like, all right, cool. So I was like, I didn't know what to do because I couldn't pee, but I had to go to the bathroom the other way.
Yeah.
So I went to my dorm room and I could have gotten in trouble for this. And I you know, went to the bathroom, came back, and I was right back in it. Another 20 minutes of drinking water and I was good to go. But I risked.
How did you go number two without going number one?
I almost, what?
This is getting into a way different.
This is
physiology, not
psychology. I'm sorry. This is a funny story.
I don't know.
How did we get on this topic?
You just had to tell it.
I couldn't help it.
All right.
The stories from the drug testing world go on and on and on. I mean,
did you do hair or mainly just pee?
Everything.
Yeah.
Fingernails, blood, hair.
Hair is a lot.
Skin patches.
The shelf life is a lot longer. As opposed to pee, right?
So it's called window of detection.
Okay.
Right? So the window of detection is different. So if you think about the physiology of the body, right? Hair takes a while to grow. So if I smoke a joint right now and then go get... Oh, wait. I don't have any. But if I had hair, if I go get that tested in the next couple days, it's not going to show up because it has to go, you know, through my system, through my blood, deposit, get into the follicle and grow out, right? Urine is much faster, right? Because it's just going to go through your blood, through your kidneys, and now you're excreting it. So you're talking within hours, you know, or less. But then it's flushed out and it's gone, right? So your window of detection is only, you know, 48 hours for something like urine, but your window of detection for hair is going to be substantially longer as long as you don't start for a week.
Gotcha.
Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
So then all your different protein bases are all different windows of detection.
When I worked for DSS, I had to send this lady for a drug screen, and she was literally like pouring bleach in her hair. She was just freaking out.
Wow.
Yeah, what's the craziest thing you've seen in terms of somebody trying to get... You mentioned you had some doozies, but... I mean, I imagine people... Because they got to go for work. They got to go for court orders or whatever.
All that stuff. I mean, DSS...
Their whole life is about to be flipped upside down, so they're completely desperate.
There are some pretty funny ones, especially like, 2 o'clock in the morning at some construction site and, some guy trying to pass off a bag of whatever instead of his own. But one of my favorites was, and this happened multiple times, and I'll kind of boil it down to one similar scenario. Guy would come in. One of the first things that we do is we look at the temperature, right? We just want to make sure that it came out of the body, right? If it's showing 105 degrees, it didn't come out of your body, right? It came out of an overheated dead body somewhere. Oh, if it came in at 80 degrees, it came out of a lifeless body, right? So I mean, there's a window. And so we look at the temperature, and the temperature's way off. And then I look at the color for this gentleman, and the color is not right. And so I just kind of look at him, and I kind of know what's going on in my head already. But I just say, are you feeling all right? Yeah, I'm feeling fine. Sure, there's no gastrointestinal problems or, nothing going on downstairs. No, I'm good. Sure, you're feeling okay? Yeah. Why do you ask? I'm like, well... You're menstruating. But the funnier part is when he says, well, what does that mean?
Means like, you're on your period?
Yeah.
Is that right? Is that
next time you get your girlfriend to do something for you.
Yeah. Make sure. That's like the episode of Seinfeld where like Elaine gets Jerry's mom to pee for her.
Opium.
And they're like,
she tested positive for opium. Because she had poppy seeds.
Right, right.
And there's also an episode of The Office where Dwight was getting a drug, he found drugs, so he ordered a person to come in and test everybody. And he was like, do you remember me? I forget what it was, but he's like, he had green pee. And she's like, oh yeah, how are you? He's like, all better.
All right, let's get into adaptivity development, man. So
all right.
What is that, and what do you guys got going on with that?
So it's a new company. We started back in January. Really, it's the coalescence of all the experiences that I've had, and I would say the network of partners and people that I work with have. So it's really, truly focused on what I would call economic development in the big picture. But, Rock Hill, Fort Mill, South Charlotte, we're not necessarily limited by barriers, but we certainly have a concentration here. And it's just looking for what are those opportunities to help people in business. That might mean taking an established business and, maybe it's struggling or it plateaued and, we need to come up with some new market dynamics, or maybe we need to streamline what it is that's their service product, or maybe we need to, look at the discretionary earnings and focus on that. I don't know. But how can we help that company do better? And by doing better, they're going to employ more people. Those people are going to spend more money. We're going to attract more business, right? Same with startups. So startups, I love it that people like brewers are a great example. I'm one of them. Just because I make a great beer, and just because my friends all love it when they're drinking it for free, doesn't mean that they're going to come busting down the door paying $7-8 a pint. So how do you turn a passion into profit, right? Into margin. And so how do you connect with the community? How do you make sure that you're not only creating jobs in its most simple form, but how are you branding in a way that's supporting a local charity? How are you, one of the things I would like to do is we'll have a month where we have a dedicated tap and some proceeds will go to a fund that we're gonna start raising money for startup companies. And so when you can't get that loan from the bank, but you got a great idea, or you don't have enough experience, well, let's start building a capital fund so that people can really see through. Now, not to say there aren't going to be qualifiers, right? It's not free money.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a network and a sense there that we can get the right thing done.
Yeah.
So whether it's a new company, a startup, another piece we're working with is family-owned companies that are struggling with the multi-generational kind of handoff.
Yeah.
Especially I find like second and third generations, you know, maybe they've grown up in the business and they've played father and son as an example, but maybe they really haven't done a good job of defining CEO versus manager, and what does that manager need to learn holistically to be able to be successful in running that company. Well, that's not just the son's problem. That's everybody. You know, everybody's involved with that. So how do we set expectations? How do we make sure that there's the proper exposure and experience so that we can take that family company and make sure that they're successful in the next turn?
Yeah. How important are systems in terms of having a successful business?
Critically.
I mean, is that kind of the first thing you dive into? Or
process and system. Honestly, the first thing I probably look at is the numbers, right? Because the numbers are going to tell me a lot, right? If we're cash flow heavy, but we don't have enough in the bank to, you know, keep things afloat or make good investments or have good inventory, then that might be our problem, right? So I got to figure out where the, like I tell my kids all the time, right? Figure out what the problem is, solve the problem. I don't know what the problem is, so I can't solve it. So there's no use, you know, running around in circles. But once we identify it, okay, now let's put the process in place. Let's put the system in place. And if I know how to do that, then I'm all over it. If it's outside my realm of expertise, then I lean on one of my partners or one of my network folks.
So it's you and how many other people are a part of?
Me, and me.
Adaptivity. Okay.
But there are some investors that are interested, and there are some network folks that one of my early jobs, we didn't talk about that one, I worked for a gentleman that was basically the founding father of the outlet mall industry. Incredible job. I learned more about what I didn't want to do than I did about what I did want to do. But one of the things that was kind of his mantras was to build a million-dollar business with no employees. It's like, well, how do you do that, right? So is it 1099s? Is it contractors? Yeah. Do you leverage networks? So on and so forth. It was different. The laws were structured different back then. But I still have that in my head is there are lots of people that are in business that do great work that I would love to just pass on as a referral. So if it's outside of my realm, I pass it on to my buddy. My buddy does a great job. They knock it out of the park. They get paid. Their business grows. I look good. And I get to focus on what I do best.
Yeah, and I think people would appreciate that, you know, if you know, especially if they're going to pay money to kind of help their business, they want to know that it's someone that's qualified doing it, so they appreciate that.
Well, as an example, one of the consortiums, I call it that, that I'm working on now is breweries are obviously exploding right
Yeah.
now. So right here in town, phenomenal manufacturer. I know a great banker who funds expansions, but doesn't do startup. I know another banker who does startup. I know an insurance guy. I know an attorney, right? And then I do kind of the business aspect of it. So if we can all get together, a real estate guy, if we can all get together and we can advertise or we can at least promote that, hey, if you have a great idea, here's a one-stop shop.
Yeah.
We all benefit, but I don't have to form a company. I don't have to have them under my payroll to make that happen. And I also don't want to be in a position where I have to force somebody, well, if you're going to use my services, then you have to use this real estate guy. It's not about that. It's about what's best for the business, what's best for the community, what's best for the people involved. And we can be extremely agile, right? Extremely flexible in a working model where it's more of a referral base like that.
Yeah.
So for the entrepreneurs listening, what he's saying is social currency is imperative. It's massive. Just as important as regular currency.
Absolutely. I mean, when you talk about social relationships, when you talk about reputation, and one of my things that's been kind of driving me crazy, you have my word, right? A gentleman's handshake and how much that means. And to follow through, I had somebody tell me one point in time, we had a gentleman's agreement, and the comment back to me was, well, if you're going to hold me to my gentleman's agreement. I was shocked by that.
Yeah. Are you going to hold me to
it? I'd be embarrassed to ask.
What does that even mean?
Yeah.
Right? Because then, what you're saying is there's really not a gentleman's agreement. So, yes, social currency, relationships, reputation, I think all those things are so vital, especially small businesses, definitely big businesses too, no question, but especially these small entrepreneurs that are trying to get started. You hear phrases and cliches like don't burn your bridges, or, you know, I think all that's true, but I think there's even more value in that social currency than people realize.
Yeah. I think, you know, Brian and I talk about that all the time, just like being willing to give before you get. You know, you don't have to, you can't approach business or relationships at all really like that. Like, you know, what can you give me? What can you give me?
And all the networking around town, and there's different groups and chamber and, you know, so on. That was always my approach. In fact, I almost had to be, because when I started the drug testing business, there wasn't a lot of people that I ran into that needed my services. It was the bigger companies. So I basically had to give first, right? Giver's gain, as they say. And that worked very well. It took a long time. I remember my wife coming back and saying, you know, when are you going to do this stuff for you? And I'm like, it's coming. It's coming. Yeah. And it did. I mean, it took a couple years, but then it paid in spades. So.
Yeah, I think that does hit home, man. It's tough. Like, it's not an instant thing. It's a long play. Like when we're doing these podcasts or videos and stuff, and you know, we're building relationships with these people that we hope to.
Absolutely.
You know? It's not like, you know, the second we hit stop on here, I'm going to be like, you know,
oh, no.
Hey, Jason,
no,
are you going to buy your son your house? You know, it doesn't work like that.
I think what you guys are doing is fantastic. I mean, I one of you reached out on LinkedIn.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that was me.
And it was like, hey, you want to do an interview? And I'm like, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm like, who is this? Right. And then Ryan's like, no, man, you got to do it. It's awesome. You know, so there's a social relationship. Right. If Ryan says it's good, yeah, I'm in. And I don't have to go double check it because I trust him.
That's awesome.
And then I found out what you guys are really doing, and I think it's great.
Now, just for clarification, you're not an investor in any of these businesses. You're not like Marcus Lemonis coming in, writing a check.
In some cases, yes.
Some cases you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm interested in that. It has to be, on my end, a pretty specific deal for that to happen. I'm getting ready to write a check.
To Brian Jones?
Probably this week.
Oh, okay.
So yes. You know what my mission statement is. I really want to grow community jobs, you know, however I can help. And a lot of that's voluntary, honestly. On the more personal side, my goal is to own or have, I should say, partial ownership in multiple companies. So I'm not planning anyway to go back to corporate 500 or above. I'm not planning on owning outright my own company besides like Adaptivity and a couple other small ones. But my goal is to say, hey, what can I do either for services and then in exchange for equity, or, you know, maybe purchase and exchange for equity and then kind of leverage those out over time.
So can you go into detail, like services for equity, for somebody who's listening that may not understand what that?
So services could be on the startup side. It's a little more clear sometimes. Folks usually come in with an idea. But there's a whole process on getting an idea into a profitable business. So first, you know, understanding the market, understanding the competition, getting into your pricing stratification. I just had a conversation last week where I was talking about a four-tier system. So the person I was working with had basically one product and then one better product. And I'm like, all right, but both of those cost you the same and you're getting a better margin on the second one. Yes. Okay, great. So what we want to do is we want to start structuring a tier three and then a tier four, where you don't necessarily have much more money invested in those products, but they are seen as premier, so people are willing to pay more. You can't have the premier without the bottom, because then your market falls out, but you want to create a condition of cash flow, right? So, you know, we want to talk about those strategies, we want to talk about the competition, we want to talk about, I encourage every business to have a list of people that they have a very strong affiliation with, and it very much goes back to the social capital. You got to have a good banker. You got to have an excellent tax person, right? CPA. You got to have an excellent attorney. You got to have a business coach. Because if you don't have somebody to reflect upon what this stuff means, I can guarantee you that your banker, your investor, and your tax guy are all going to tell you different things to do with the same money. Yeah. So you got to sort through and figure out, okay, what do you do in this situation, which might be different than that situation, because they're coming at it from a perspective, right? So those could be services. It could be anything from writing a business plan and getting that up to finding funding. There are lots of different ways to fund businesses, but not everybody knows how to go get the money. You don't necessarily need money to start a business, right? Depending on the type of business it is. Also, licensing and your corporate structure, where they go an LLC, an S-Corp, not-for-profit agency, you know, so on and so forth. And there are hoops and hurdles to and challenges to deal with each of those. And then most importantly, what is your backdrop, right? How are you getting yourself, how are you funding yourself as you're getting into business? And then what's your exit strategy, and how do you know it happens that you need to pull the trigger, right? If it's not working, how do you know? You know, before you literally drive yourself into bankruptcy or have legal problems or so on and so forth, what are those trigger points so that you know along the way, okay, things are going well. Nope, I'm calibrated. We're good. Let's keep going. Yeah.
When someone hires you, what does that look like? I mean, do you do like a consultation at first, or
absolutely. Yeah. So initially, yeah, it's just a conversation. I got to figure out, you know, established business, new business. Are they acquiring? Are they selling? You know, one gentleman, he wants to sell a business and he doesn't know how to go about it. So first, we got to get everything in order. A lot of people don't know that it takes about a year from the day that you post a business. It takes, on average, a year to actually sell it.
Just for due diligence or for...
No, just through the, you know, identification of a qualified candidate that comes through, that gets financing, and then they do the due diligence, yeah. And then there's back and forth and negotiation and so on and so forth. And that, I'd say that's a standard deal. And the challenge is a lot of folks maybe that are entering retirement, or maybe they're just, you know, fed up with their business or whatever it might be, once they finally make the decision... Okay, I'm ready to sell my business. They're so ready to just be done with it.
Yeah,
that's where the work begins, right? Not necessarily on the business per se, but the work begins on positioning it to be sold. And it's a process, just like anything else, right? So it takes time, and you gather the information, you gather the fundamentals, and then you go like selling a house, right? You got to get through and find your buyers, and then you're going to have a lot more buyers that come, you know, interested in looking for a deal that maybe aren't qualified. You're going to have some that are qualified, but, you know, the cash flow isn't there, or whatever it is, or the 3X isn't there. So, you know, it's a whole process.
Do you want to talk about just...
Marcus Lemonis, by the way, is like my hero.
He's awesome. You watched the show on The Prophet?
Yeah. I want to see the one with Russell Brunson. I really want to check that episode.
He was on there?
Oh, yeah.
That may be the one, like I said, I wasn't going to go get a real job. Like, I would be a candidate. I could be convinced to, like, apply to be the partner, I think it was called.
Yeah, and, yeah.
Like, go and work for him or with him or whatever.
Did you see the one he did on marijuana, cool. Brian?
That was cool, too.
No.
Oh man, he went to California and was talking to all these.
I need to watch this show.
He won't.
What am I doing?
It's a great show.
He doesn't want to get involved because it's still federally illegal. Right.
Go ahead.
No, because I saw your post about you read some article on.
So the other episode, did you see where he went to Cuba?
No, I didn't.
So I was in Cuba like 2 weeks before that episode, and it was a fantastic and spot. On, because I was down there looking for business development opportunities, investment opportunities, trying to get a feel for how the economy and the politics were working. Fascinating. It was like 6 months of experience in, you know, 8 days. We met with the Department of Agriculture. We met with the university. We met with entrepreneurs. We met with wannabe entrepreneurs. We went to a microbrewery in Cuba, which was awesome.
I didn't realize they had those.
It's only one, but yeah, it was fascinating. And then to watch Marcus, you know, in his Cuba, which is online. I mean, you can watch it.
Yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
We'll check him out.
It's probably sitting in my DVR. I record all his stuff.
Right, you know, it was like walking back through the same streets. It was very cool.
How do you feel about your life as an entrepreneur? I mean, what are some things you do to help manage stress and to help you through the roller coaster, man?
Definitely roller coasters, no question about it. Definitely dark times. And probably, in fact, I did a LinkedIn post recently, and I was just saying, you know, what is the life of an entrepreneur? And I was describing, you know, there's no office hours, right? It doesn't start at 9 and end at 5. I mean, it doesn't, you don't get to hang it up, you know, because it's Christmas or whatever. Yeah. I mean, you're always working. There's always sacrifice to the family. There's always frustrations that pop up, and it seems to happen at the worst moments, but they're frustrations, so of course it's a worst moment. But then the flip side is, I mean, the flexibility and the accomplishment, and when you look back and you can see that you've helped these individuals, you've helped these companies, you've generated, you know, this much profitability, you've created something. And more importantly, now what I'm focused on more than even creating myself is creating something for somebody else is awesome. I can't even describe it. So then you have those moments where I go surfing with my kids on, you know, Wednesday out in Lake Wiley behind a boat, and we're having a blast, and I'm like, it's Wednesday afternoon, you know, I'm not in an office, you know, and then we take a week off, and, you know, I took my wife to Greece for a couple weeks. That was great, right? And I mean, just get away from the phone, and you button Greece. Everything up, and I know I'm going to deal with stuff when I get back, but Greece was phenomenal, you know? I don't know that I could do that as a corporate person and just, you know, check out for 2 weeks.
Yeah. You want 2 weeks off? What are you talking about? You want vacation? Go teach preschool. Get Colette in here.
Yeah. What is this request I got?
I want to take my wife to Greece for 2 weeks. No, stop. You get 7 days a year.
What are some of the challenges that you've conquered, or what are some of the lessons that you've learned, I guess?
So many lessons. Just so many lessons. You know, I think it always comes back to just sorting through. I mean, the life of an entrepreneur is you are constantly faced by challenges and obstacles and probably things that you never even thought about before. I remember, you know, the first time I got hit with an unemployment claim, and, you know, that unemployment is going to stack up if you don't address them against your business, and eventually cost you, I mean, it could cost you almost like half a head if you don't address those things. And in this particular case, I mean, this person flat out was in the wrong. So, you know, having to fight that, having to produce the documentation, having to go through that, sit in that, you know, arbitration, or they don't call it an arbitration, what do they call it? I can't remember.
That is what it is, isn't it?
There's a formal name for unemployment, and it skips my mind right now, but...
Is that why you want to build a business with no employees? Like, I learned my lesson. You'd have to 1099, wouldn't you, pretty much?
Well, 1099s are pretty specific, right? If a 1099 has to be in their own control. So I have to say, your job is to sell houses, and that's about the only direction I can give you. And then if you sell a house, then I pay you. But if I'm saying, oh, you need to look at this neighborhood, and we're looking for this price range, and oh, here's one strategy, and how are you marketing, and I really want you to brand our company, and so on and so forth, you start getting into all that, and it's not a 1099 anymore, it's an employee. Negotiations are tough. Buying and selling is tough. For me, the toughest thing is once we've hit, and I don't know if this totally exists, but complete status quo, where now all you have to do is just follow the process, just do it again, man, that is not me, right? But there are people who thrive on that, right? Tell me what the process is, tell me what I need to do, and I'll go do it, and I'll go do it really well, but I don't like monkey wrenches, I don't like unknowns, I don't like surprises, right? And I'm the opposite end, I like the surprises.
Yeah, there definitely are people that are set up for, like, intense structure, man. They need to know what to expect.
Right. And you know, for entrepreneurs, you have to have process. You have to have structure, no doubt. But there's also flexibility within that.
Yeah. It can be a challenge, for sure. What are some of the things... You're a public speaker, right? So how can people get in touch with you to do that? And then what are some experiences that you've had with that?
Love public speaking. So my early psychology and climbing and all that turned into a lot of speaking, a lot of training, executive development and such. So since that has unfolded, I've spoken at the National DASHA Conference, which is the Drug and Alcohol Testing Industry Association. That was... kind of a focus on local market penetration and how small businesses could stratify their customers and really target individual cash flow. I am leaving in a couple weeks to speak at the SHRM conference, the big annual SHRM, which is Society for Human Resource Management conference in Puerto Rico.
Oh, yeah.
So looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Had one of my buddies that is now a president of a big company reach to me on LinkedIn, and he goes, so if it was in Toledo, would you be as excited?
I said, yes, of course I would. Not in January. But...
So excited for that. So I do leadership. I do, you know, specific topics. And how to get in touch with me, I mean, the Adaptivity website is the best. So it's just www.adaptivitydev, D-E-V as in development.com. And I can always be reached there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, Jason Collette, man, thanks for coming, dude. You had a lot of good stuff. We should do a part two sometime.
We will. Let's do a part two.
Bring him and Ryan in. And yeah. We didn't even talk about 1 million cups and all that other stuff you're doing.
Yeah, 1 million cups. I'm sponsoring that, so for the next 18 months.
What does that mean?
So they just needed somebody to kind of step up and put some funds for it so they could continue with the process. Yeah. So I'm like the, I don't know what, I'm a sponsor. I don't know if it's title sponsor, premier sponsor. I don't know what kind of sponsor I have.
Of the York County branch? Or of the,
yep. Okay. Yep. So once a month we meet and hear new business ideas and...
Now, are you the defending Rock Hill Area Business Person of the Year? Or do you walk around
Yes.
and you claim that? I'm the defending champion?
Yes. That's why I wear my helmet and, you know, my safety glasses. See, you'd think these are tan lines from, like, sunglasses. These are safety glasses because I'm always on the defense.
I'm on the defense.
I'm ready to tackle.
You're champion. All right, man. Well, thanks for coming on the Jones Zone.
Yep.
I look forward
Absolutely.
To
Thank you.
Meeting
thanks
you
so
again and talking more about it, man.
Yeah, it was fun.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Jones Zone podcast with Chris and Brian Jones. We'll catch you on the next episode.